Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A 3, 2, 1... Beautiful. Jill's gonna have one question for you. Do you like Uber Stank?
What the hell, man? Every single week you always say, I've got a question for you, and it's never the question that I anticipate. Is it gonna be to do with gaming? Is it gonna be to do with another cereal that he's poured in a pint glass? No, it's Uber Stank. Why is Uber Stank on your mind?
I did a random, you know, on Spotify when you can go on like a song radio. I went on the Tony Hawk's 2 soundtrack, and I went on like a playlist. Yeah, it is one of the best soundtracks of all time. And I was like, give me like a playlist radio. And it served up Uber Stank, and I've not had a Uber Stank love-in in a long time. Crawl in the dark.
Uber Stank, Uber Stank, more like, who are they? That's what the young kids are talking about now, because I mean, they are old, man. I mean, imagine, right, being back in the day and just sitting around. You just go, yeah, Uber Stank. That's the name. That's the one. That's the ticket to glory, pals.
Oh, the actual name of the band.
Yeah, the name of the band, Uber Stank.
Big Hooby. But I think I remember when they revealed Halo 2 and it had The Reason under it.
Oh,
and back then,
yeah.
That was the best mix of trailer music, best mix of visuals and trailer music ever. Whereas now, cheesy as hell.
Oh yeah, very cheesy. It's very super of the cheesy time, isn't it?
But yeah, any remaining Hooverstank fans, all four of you, then know that I'm one of you at least at the minute.
And those Hooverstank fans can be welcomed, along with everyone else who's not a Hooverstank fan, to the UBP. The UBP.
We're doing a bit of a different one this week because we didn't realise that you weren't in tomorrow when we usually record. But luckily, we have thousands of questions built up in the old take trough from months of doing this, years of doing this.
It is.
It's dribbling, so we thought we'd dive into that and get through as many questions in that regard as possible. I don't know if I said our names. I'm Scott Tilford. That's Jules Gill.
I am indeed, unfortunately.
Every single week. So first question from Wild Child Nation, who says, long-time fan, first-time poster. Do you think games need to go back to less serious matters? I play games to escape world matters and do silly fun things, but now games are trying to be part of these issues.
I can definitely attest to the fact that sometimes the real world does get a bit too much, and it is nice to have the escapism afforded to you by video games. I will say at the moment I'm playing through Ollie Ollie World at the moment, and I love that, man, because it is so detached from reality, so detached from any form of seriousness whatsoever, that it is just a pure slice of gaming fun. And I love having the ability to flip between games that are super serious with like cinematic scopes, and then you've got these silly sort of like fun at the center experiences like Ollie Ollie World. So I don't necessarily think that it has to go back to it, because I do feel that the market's already being catered for. I just think you have to know where to look, and it's definitely, I would argue, outside of the AAA experience. The AAA versions that we get today are, I mean, Scott, I could basically name any of these facets and you'd be like, yep, that's a game that exists in the top 10 sales list in the UK at the moment. So it's like a gritty war shooter where they talk about some real human emotions, and maybe they have some sort of like superhero element to them, and looter shooters. Like, it's all just this blob that takes up the top 10 AAA, whereas the indie experience, much more fun, unique experiences as well.
Well, I think, like, for me, it's always going to be about gameplay stuff. I think there's a weird, like, ongoing conversation, or there has been, about the idea of, like, mature stuff needs to be in there to get a five-star game. It has to be more like A Last of Us, or more like the PlayStation's first-party output in general. And when was the last time a completely more arcade-focused game, or mechanically-focused game entirely, got given five stars? Like, they're so few and far between. The thing is, I've been playing Aka R on Switch, which is like a Jeff Minter, who's like the legendary game designer, did some Atari stuff, did Tempest 2000, like went back and managed to like do an agreement with Atari to re-release Aka R, which like there is a version of that on like the Atari 50 collection.
Sure.
But that is a game that is just so straight out of the 80s, like just a super over-the-top neon-caked thing that is like very little story. You wouldn't even want it. It's just sort of like kill some invading shapes and do it with this ridiculous soundtrack and these like random sound clips that just say like stupid noises in the background. That's something that I'm gonna like, I love to see. I think that it's like, it is one of those like variety is the spice of life things, but I do get so tired of things like The Last of Us Part Two. Not that I don't love that game, but they're exhausting. Like the stuff that started coming out about just, you know, when like the whole Last of Us HBO TV show, like, and the idea of who actually created The Last of Us, and the idea of it was like entirely Neil Druckmann versus obviously Bruce Straley was a co-writer and a co-creator, and now it's just referred to as Neil Druckmann's thing. And
We were talking before in like a previous UBP episode about how it's like certain people get attributed to the entire project. It's like a Hideo Kojima game isn't just Hideo Kojima making everything there. It's him plus a team. And it's people do get forgotten in the mix with the auteur thing.
Straley was just saying, like, you know, the idea, the way that they created The Last of Us was far more collaborative. Like it was like Neil would want, like Druckmann has said, he's like, I'm a very dark person. He likes dark subject matter. And you can tell when he fully took over for The Last of Us Part Two, it's a far more darker, relentlessly dark game. But Straley was saying, like, you know, Druckmann would be all like, I want to do dark stuff. Straley would try and balance it out. And there were other members of the cast and the crew and everything that would suggest things to get that overall tone that Last of Us 1 has.
Yeah.
And so for me, I definitely prefer that. I was saying to Josh the other day, if Druckmann had entirely created Last of Us 1, I don't even know if I would have cared about it. I don't even know if it would have like caught on in the same way or not.
It's weird, isn't it? Because there are certain games like that, that like The Last of Us, that are like Oscar baiting. That's the way that you would describe them if they were films. And you're right. Like I can't remember a time where a charming indie title came along and did it with like a breezy, cheery nature and managed to capture everything. Like people are attracted to the dark and the complex subject matter presented in the likes of these AAA games like God of War and The Last of Us. So I don't know if a indie game can ever win over the gaming award shows.
Or because, like a cinematic game.
I just don't think it's possible because of the fact that I think that people just gravitate towards what is reflected in cinema. They feel like if it doesn't have some sort of emotionally stirring core narrative or some really horrible subject matter to deal with, then it will never get that sort of critical appraisal that so many other, that those big games do. But what happens is that those games that nearly achieve that, that are like the perfect cheery, breezy games, they become the cult classics, like your Psychonauts or your Akamis, like they are the ones that are talked about and revered for years after because they always felt like they never got the full chance to shine, yet were still impeccable games in their own right.
That's a fascinating thing because I'm watching the Psycho Odyssey stuff and the Double Fine have got on their YouTube channel, which I recommend to anybody who cares about video games. Just it's like a 32-part breakdown of how they made Psychonauts 2.
Oh, but amazing! I haven't heard about that. I will definitely. Oh,
mate, it's phenomenal. Like they filmed it from 2017 all the way through until the game shipped. Just proper fly on the wall. What was happening?
Awesome.
How did that game come together? It's brilliant. Pendleton Ward's in there as well, who I think, you know, the creator of Adventure Time.
He just popped in at one
point. And just to help like with conceptual stuff, but Psychonauts 2 is and for me Celeste are like great examples of games that tackle with mature subject matter and mature themes like deal with mental health and overcoming struggles and everything, but it's fundamentally intertwined into the gameplay and it's fundamentally a video game story. And I think like I would rather have things that go in that direction, like like I was still in absolute bits by the end of Celeste because I was literally playing somebody overcoming their struggle as opposed to watching it in a cutscene. It's not that I don't love God of War, Ragnarok or whatever, but it is interesting that the cinematic, like you said, the Hollywood stuff, there's almost like an upper echelon of game reviews or game ratings that are reserved for like, but did it make you cry? But did it make did it get to you? Whereas like we can't just celebrate something. I mean, it's not that I don't think that they are 4.5 or 5-star games, but like something like a Celeste or a Psychonauts 2, like I think that's more of an example of like how you could do a 5-star video game story that is just as weighty as something like that is more belabored, like a Last of Us, where they spell it out. You know, they give you the zoom ins on the emotion happening. Look how much they're crying. Look how much anger there is. Like, there's a whole other way that you could do it.
I do feel as well that we're the video game awards are quite shallow as well. Like, if it doesn't have like £1 million for puddle technology, then you're not going to like make as much of a dent. Like,
that's a really good point.
I don't know any game that's come across that's won tons of awards that hasn't looked absolutely stunning as well as carrying that subject matter. Because it's like your Red Dead Redemption 2s, your Left 4 Dead, your Horizons, they all win big because they look big. But it's like, that's, you know, true. That game that came out when it was like, you're playing through the Middle Ages and it looks like a Chaucerian tale.
Kingdom Come Deliverance?
Not that one. It was the one that's like 2D.
Oh, Pentiment, yes.
Pentiment, yeah. It was like people were saying that the story of that was really, really engaging and fantastic. And as a game, it was perfectly crafted for what it is. But it will never win massive video game awards because it doesn't look like a AAA game. It doesn't look like a blockbuster.
Some of the stuff with the game, because it is Jeff Keighley, I feel like his heart's mostly in the right place. Like, I do some stuff he's managed to give. Like, I remember when they awarded Her Story was like best story, and that game is like a live action shot thing, and that beat The Witcher back in like 2015. There are a couple of times when that happens, but it's definitely
Best story, you know what I mean? And it didn't go on to become like it was a critical darling, but it wasn't like a world renowned success story like those previous games that we've mentioned. And I reckon that, unfortunately, as much as it is, you need to have not just a good story, but you need to have it looking like it is so polished. It's a bit unfair. I just think it's really unfair to indie developers, really.
Yeah, for me, it's like we had this whole period from like about 1998 all the way through like the 2000s to the early 2010s where it was just, can we chase Hollywood? Can we beat Hollywood? Mm-hmm. How well can we render faces and dramatic acting? And that Metal Gear Solid was like a huge deal, and then Uncharted was a major leap up, and then The Last of Us was a major leap up. And it's like, we've proven it. We've proven we can digitize acting performances. And so for me, it's not that I don't want that stuff, but I am curious, what can you do that is fundamentally a video game story? What can you do that's fundamentally like tied to, that elevates our medium rather than just makes those filmic comparisons? Because for the longest time, Kojima was like, "Oh, I wish I was a film director. I want to make a film."
Oh, and really? Like, yeah, couldn't have told from your hour and a half cutscenes that you put into your games. You literally are a filmmaker, mate.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm just like, yeah, I'd always be. Not that I think that's a question, like the original question of like, you know, do you want them to stop dealing with them, you know, serious matters? No, I want them to deal with the most serious matters. Mm-hmm. But I kind of also want them to do it in a way that is fundamentally video gamey. If we're talking about ideals.
Yeah, I think that the way that we have a current balance of the indie market going for gameplay and detailing stories in a way that will hit and resonate with you on a much more personal scale, and then you've got the other end of the spectrum where it's just like big bombastic budgets just being thrown around all over the place. It's like, you do have a great mix. So no, I think that at the moment I would want them to carry on doing what they're doing. And in fact, given the sort of rise of political strife that's going on in the world, I would expect that the next generation of big storytelling games, we've already discovered or started to explore the depths and depravity of humanity, but I do think the next couple of years we're going to see some real horror shows coming out.
Yeah, I mean, I remember like the 2013 boom, that's sort of like the idea, like when video games got inducted into the Museum of Modern Art and they were finally like regarded as art, there was that whole conversation about that. But you got games like Papers, Please, or This War of Mine came after that, and there was that whole idea of like making really tough thematics playable or interactive. Like, that is the stuff that I think is super worthwhile. I think of like Red Dead Redemption 2, like I've referred to that as like a AAA game with an indie soul. It's like, it's taking its time. It wants you to feel like you're this dying guy in the Wild West. And I think that's like fantastic. You'll probably never get a game like that anymore, especially from Rockstar, because they're like, Dan Houser, a lot of their lead creatives have gone.
I mean, it's going to be so scary. I mean, GTA 6 is going to be the litmus test for what the future of Rockstar is, because if they come out and that game is just like all style, no substance, stinker, let's just get as much money out of you as possible, shark card, then honestly, I genuinely think that Red Dead is just on the bricks. We won't get another good one.
No, they'll never do something like Red Dead 2 again. I mean, that game was barely finished. It was only 20%, I mean, in terms of people who finished it, about 20% of people or whatever finished it, or 10%.
And you know what? It's going to be under such close scrutiny as well, that game, if they ever did announce it, because of the huge amount of crunch culture that was involved in getting it made and all of the ridiculous behind-the-scenes stories you heard of people suffering for their art. Mm. And it's like, if Red Dead Redemption 3 ever comes out, people are going to be like, you are going to be taking at least 5 years longer than you say if you're going to do this thing legitimately.
Well, that's what they've done with GTA 6. There was like a whole, like after it leaked like last year or whatever, there was that whole write-up of them just saying, like, we can just take our time, and management want us to, because GTA 5 is still selling. GTA Online is
still
flying.
It's so ridiculous.
It'll be its 10th year anniversary in October.
Yeah, I know. It's
like,
nuts.
Which is ridiculous. But anyway, yeah, I think, yeah, hopefully gamers dive into more serious stuff, but do it well. Next question, John, from It's Me, Poolsy. Hey.
Hey.
If you had to give a game to show off, if you had to give a game to show off games to someone like the Pope or a president or some aliens, etc., what game would that be?
It wouldn't be Destroy All Humans 2, I'll tell you that much, because if it was the aliens, they'd be like, right, okay, then that's a good idea. Let's start taking over. It would be... It's a hard one, that, because how do you show a game to people who don't game? Do you go for something that is so visually impressive, but risk maybe alienating them by them going, whoa, it's way too much, way too quickly? Mm-hmm. Or do you go for a simple, pared-back visual experience that focuses on addictive gameplay?
I think that's where I'm at. I think it would be like, what does the medium give you? There is a certain feeling, there's a certain rush, there's an excitement to interacting with something and having it pay off. It's that. So I think it would have to be something that is just so fundamentally satisfying and addictive. My mind, though, cannot think of the perfect game that matches narrative to...
You've got to look at what the requirements were. So it's got to be to the president. The Pope. President, the Pope, and some aliens. They're all in the room, and you've got to give them a video game. So obviously, you can't do one that bashes religion, because obviously the Pope's going to be out. You can't do one that's going to be you killing aliens, because the aliens are going to be out. And you can't do anything that's going to be too politically dicey, because the president's going to be out. So you're kind of narrowing it down to like Tetris at this point. And even then, that's got Russia involved with it, so you can't even give them that.
My mind went to Balloon Fight. I was just trying to think of something.
What was that game that got banned off of Steam and then came back? Genital Jousting. That's what you give. Yeah. Oh no, because the Pope wouldn't like that. Oh God. Oh.
I think for me it would be like this. Because for me, when I went through the Atari 50 collection, it was just such a reminder of like the purest gameplay ideas can still be timeless. Even stuff from like the late 70s can still be
like
really
Asteroid
fun.
Sort of thing. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Really like addictive and really recommendable, and so immediately recommendable that my mind does go to things like I said, Balloon Fight or Tempest or just really ancient stuff. But I'm also in a bit of an Atari bubble at the minute because I've been doing all that stuff. So I think if you talk about something that, like, for me, it would have to tick all the boxes of what video games can be, so you would want some of that cinematic flair, but not something entirely. I don't know if it would just be the original Metal Gear Solid or something.
That's way too complex for them, because they don't play games. I think
they've
that
got
it's
thumbs,
got
though.
Well, the aliens might. I don't know. They might be gaseous forms. The thing is, they're called the Big Stinkies. I think that you'd give them something like a walking simulator. Something that is very peaceful, very calm, that can focus on the aesthetics, but makes them take their own time to just explore and do what they want. And then maybe add a bit of intrigue in with that. Like Gone Home. I wouldn't say Dear Esther. Dear Esther's actually like quite boring. I went back to it recently and I was just like, wow, this...
The aliens would blow us up if they had to play through Dear Esther.
They'd be like, where is the actual content in this game? It's like, don't worry, it'll come in about 3 hours. Maybe Firewatch could be a good one.
Firewatch is a great shout. Walking Sims are a great shout to give, to someone who's never played games before.
You know what, mate? I've just realised what game it is we should be giving them. It's Game of the Year of 2021.
Okay.
Oh, 2022, sorry. It's Stray. Clearly it's Stray. Everyone needs to play Stray. And it's got cats in. Everyone loves cats.
The cat saves the world.
And it's so, like, the puzzles are so simple that anyone will get them.
I wish I could think of the perfect game that marries arcade, instantaneous play with some sort of story payoff. It would be something like a Celeste, but I guess that's quite, like, there's a lot.
It's quite difficult, actually. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, Shredder's Revenge.
Yeah, should we just get him on that?
Oh, my
beat
God.
Him up?
It's Shredder's Revenge. That's so satisfying. It doesn't really have the story stuff, but it's so beautiful. The music's incredible. If the Pope, the President, and a bunch of aliens play the game together. There are two aliens in this case, so there's four of them total. They would oh my God, TMNT Shredder's Revenge is a god tier game.
Glork, pass them to me. Glab, glab, glee, glab. What did you say about my mother?
Question from Jack Asbury, who says, what's the most expensive secondhand game you've ever bought? I would really like Pokemon XD Gale of Darkness, but it's not worth £265.
Yeah, it's like the secondhand market for old retro games is silly, man. Like, I think that I managed to get a copy of No More Heroes for the PS3 before it went crazy in price, and now it's like £50 or something like that for it. But in terms of like secondhand games that I own that are actually worth money that I paid for a lot at the time, I'd probably say I did pay a lot for most of my PS1 collection. I remember I was very lucky in the fact that I won an eBay bid and managed to get like our favorite Wolf Dog and Sheep Dog and Wolf. Remember that? Got that
Sheep
in there.
Raider. Yeah,
Sheep Raider. I managed to get
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All of the Resident Evil games, they were actually quite expensive to own physically. Mm-hmm. Like the 1, 2, and 3, they can fetch like nearly 20 quid, 20, 30 quid a time. So
yeah, there was a copy of Resident Evil 2 in... there's a shop in the UK called CEX, but they call themselves Sex. It's a thing.
Because it's funny.
Because it's hilarious. And I guess it's making me mention them right now. And they're known for like secondhand stuff and used games and everything. They had a copy of Resident Evil 2 on PS1 in our local store in the Northeast for about £60.
Wow.
And it was like a mint condition one. Like you said, though, all the retro stuff is sky high. Like me trying to, when I got my N64, I was like, I'll get a pristine boxed collection of N64 games. Each one is like £70-80.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of crazy.
There's some that are like absolutely mad prices as well. Like, if you've got them even just outside with just the cartridge for the N64, they're worth absolute mint, mad money. Like, isn't that, there's one game that everyone tries to get. What's it called? Is it not Blast Corps?
Blast Corps is one of them.
It might be one of them that's like that is worth absolutely silly money. You vamp, and I'm just going to do most expensive.
Well, I need to tell a tale, because I got a Game Boy Advance SP a couple of years ago, because I was like, I just wanted to replay my old Game Boy Advance collection. I wanted to get a few new things and just have the SP. That little clamshell thing is a really cool design. And I really wanted to play through Minish Cap. It was like one of the only Zeldas I'd never played. Yeah. And so I bought the Game Boy Advance SP, which was about £100, because it was like a mint one. And then they couldn't find any copies of Minish Cap itself after that. They weren't like extortionate pricing. And then I went to New York, because I was on the honeymoon and everything. Mm-hmm. And I found a little game shop in New York, and they had it in for like, it was like $50 or $60. And I was like, oh, F it. I'm on holiday. I just want this game at some point. I have the SP with me. And so I spent that money. So like in total, it was like, I don't know, £100, £110, £120. Ridiculous. Yeah. Because they've now added Minish Cap to the Switch Online.
I know, and they're just like, cool,
so
brilliant.
I would have just had that anyway. So stuff like that, where, I mean, I'm glad that I have the physical copy of it, and I do like playing it on the SP, but it's not as good as playing it on the Switch.
I mean, I was thinking about this the other day. Like, I've got my PS1 collection, which is probably maybe between 75 to like 100 games up there, but it's all up in the attic at the moment.
Oh, have you still got everything?
Yeah, I've still got all of them. It was one of the few things that I made sure to take from Newcastle when I came and moved down here to Wales. And I'm like, do I hold on to them just because I can have them? I've not played my PS1 in ages, and I haven't even booted up my PS3 that allows me to play PS1 discs in absolutely ages as well. So I think to myself, should I just sell them to somebody who would actually get use out of them and use the money to do something nice, like go on holiday or do something like that? I don't know.
I have the sentimentality nature. Like, I mean, I still have a copy of Jedi Power Battles. I still have ECW Hardcore Revolution. Like, I have a very select few of what I got whittled down to, and that I just like to have. have on a shelf.
Do you have like a favorite collector's game? Like one that not necessarily that you paid the most for, but the one that you are so glad that you have a physical copy
it's
of?
It's probably just my copy of Sonic from the Mega Drive, because it's such a chunky case. Like those old Mega Drive cases were so big and bulky. And I got a mint condition one from a collector's shop in France. I sound like I'm the most globe-trotting man right now, but I've been to different places across the last 10 years. And found this lovely little street in France that had loads of like nerdy shops on, and one of them was a collector's place, and it was like a mint condition copy of the original Sonic. I forget how much that was, but I didn't care because I just loved Sonic. So I threw money at the man, and I think that's like a lovely thing to have. I love the tactility of those cases. I kind of miss how chunky old stuff is because you just don't get it anymore. So maybe it's that. It's not necessarily rare. It's just that it's in perfect condition.
See, I'm in the same position. It's not rare in the slightest, but my copy of Dynasty Warriors 3, it's the same copy I had when I was a kid. So it was, I don't even know when that game came out. Like, we're talking like early 2000s. So that's stuck with me throughout my entire life and is still one of my favorite Dynasty Warrior games, but I haven't gone back to it. So I know it's probably tosh by today's standards, but I just look at it and go, wow, the amount of time that I spent on that game, what a great time. Love
I always
game.
Just think that you could go back, though. That's always the thing that makes me keep them, is I'm like, well, one day, maybe I'll want to do this, and then knowing that you have access to
when have
to
you and
library.
I got the time to do anything, mate? Like, the thing is, I was talking to like my friend about this the other day. He was like, oh, yeah, you work for What Culture? It must be amazing to play video games all day. I was like, bro, no I don't get to play video games. Like, I have to play video games outside of my own time, and barely then, because I have, as soon as work ends, it's like real life is still there waiting for me. I've got to do other
stuff. I was
going
to say, like, the other part of that pie is like the works bit, and then like, they want to play a game stuff, then actual life is the other part of that pie that we all have to try and balance. But yeah, like you said, the retro game market is mad expensive these days. It's hard to nail stuff down.
I found out what it was. It was a Stunt Racer 64 was the one I was remembering, right? And do you know what? It was £700. That they were
good lord.
For. Yeah.
That was because it was like a limited press release or whatever, limited pressing.
Do you know what? Some of these things end up getting rare just because of the fact that they were so common for a while, but everyone's just binned them off. So it's like scarcity just becomes real, even if the game's absolute tosh, because weirdly enough, I'm just going to double check this as I talk. So 50 Cent, Blood on the Sand, right?
What a game.
No joke, is actually quite expensive now. Let's go.
Well, we've done a few lists on the channel of like 360 games. Dream. I think we did 360. I think we've done N64 and a PS1 one of games you didn't realize are worth millions. Oh, games that are worth a lot now, kind of thing.
This is 35 quid used, like for a game that was, and I remember this like about £3 or £4, like secondhand in like sex or whatever. Like
speaking of old games that should be cheaper, only because I'm going to Japan at the end of the month. Mm-hmm. I'm in such a Final Fantasy mood at the minute, and 12 is one of the only ones that I've not finished. And
is it so quite expensive?
It's $44.99 on the Switch.
Get
eShop.
Out.
And I'm like,
get
it's a PS2
mate.
Game.
Can't you just get like the Zodiac edition that's on the PC and all the other versions?
Well, that's the one that's $44.99, but I already have that on PS5, or PS4, PS5.
Oh, right.
So I was like, I wanted to have it for the Switch so I could start. I mean, it's going to be, what, like 80 hours long anyway?
You are a bloody hoarder, mate. The fact that you've got multiple games on different, the same game on multiple consoles, man. They can't even transfer the save between them. So you're just kind of like, oh, I've got 60 hours through Final Fantasy 12 on the PS4. But
well, I downloaded Final Fantasy 9 on my Switch. I already had a copy of that and I downloaded it because old me must have thought you were
going to
play
played through
it.
That like already.
Well, I know, but like it's really, really good, and I haven't played through the whole thing since I first played through it in like 2000 or whatever.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I'll pick up my old save because I'm only a few hours in. I remember doing the first few hours. No, that was a different version of Final Fantasy 9 that I bought on the PlayStation that I did do the first few hours of. Oh, so I started 9 all over again yesterday. But
again.
Final Fantasy 12 should not be £45.
No,
that's ridiculous. Next question from the Mad Beard, who says, ooh, is VR it. Actually really worth it? Up to this point, VR has seemed a gimmicky cash grab and a failed venture.
Yep. I totally agree with your worry, my friend, but I can only speak from experience, and my experience with VR has been a very positive one I've had. To be honest, I think that what's happened is that all my friends have curated all of the VR games and just shown me the best ones off there, and there are quite a few out there that are just absolute dross and do not deserve to be on there. But I played the Walking Dead Saints and Sinners game or whatever it was. I played Beat Saber, which is incredible fun. And I also played through the opening sections of Resident Evil 7 with it, and I feel like those three experiences on their own made VR completely makes sense to me. I was like, this is amazing. When you're fully immersed in there, playing three very different styles of video games, I just had the best time. I won't say that I want to drop 500 Swiddly Diddlies on the newest one, but that's where I let Josh do all of that. He then goes through all that, tells me if it's worth anything or not, and then in about 3 or 4 years, when the tech's about to die, I'll pick it up then.
That's kind of where I'm at, because the price is what makes me run a mile from it. I do think there's like a lot, because I was watching the Jeff Gerstmann show, which is like Jeff Gerstmann left Giant Bomb, formed his own show, and he was talking about this as well, and he was reading out one of the, there's a quote from one of the guys who's like running Oculus, talking about their sales stats coming out of Christmas, and he was like, oh, the original adopters of VR were like super into the system, they bought it up, we had this initial sales success, and he was like, the newest people just aren't, they don't care as much, the newest people aren't like, you know, going, it's like people who love VR, but that's it, like that market is almost quite closed, and like, Gerstmann was just saying like the sheer reality that the head of Oculus is saying like this just isn't working for the new audience is pretty damn telling as to whether this does have a future or not.
Do you know why it it's happened like that though? It's because Oculus and all of the VR headsets were ones that were introduced to a gaming industry that was already moving forward with its own thing. It was basically like, hey, you can play this game with this, and there are only a handful of titles that are only for the Oculus or made better by VR. Until Sony, Microsoft, Nintendo decides to do their new console with the VR headset included, as in it is part of the console experience itself, you will never see it transition over there, because the market is so small. There might be people out there that are listening to this saying, well, I've got a VR headset. You are definitely in the tiniest of percentiles for people who actually have access to it. It's just a matter of dollars and cents in this.
True. I think, yeah, that's one of the things that he was saying, which I guess is what we've already thought about, which just feels obvious anyway. It's just that, what are the game? Where are the games? Like, for me, I've been waiting for the analog stick moment, as I keep referring it to VR, where like analog sticks fundamentally change the way we control games. Where are the VR games that are fundamentally, like the gameplay is fundamental to the fact that it's in VR? Like, you know, maybe you can climb up something manually, or you can aim at two people at once or whatever, but it's not enough to make it, like you said, make you spend £500 on it. And a lot of the stuff now, even things like Pistol Whip, which like seem incredible, look incredible. I know Josh is like loving that stuff. For me, it's just like, it's another shooting gallery. It's another thing that's a first-person shooter.
I found it so strange that Sony dropped this PSVR 2 headset in the midst of what is probably their biggest drought of video games, because we're still in a situation where the PS5 only still like has maybe 15 to 20 games that you can fully recommend that are unique to that platform, if that. And we have been now looking at this console since, what, 2020?
2020,
yeah. Yeah, like, we're in this position where I don't know what they were thinking, because they've clearly just pushed this bit of tech out and gone, yeah, this also exists, but we're not tying it to any of the core PS5 experience. So you can pick this up. You can pick it up.
Well, the thing that blew my mind was that it wasn't even listed on Amazon. Like, it is in certain territories. Someone got in touch to say that they did have access to it on the Australian Amazon. But for us, you had to go through this specific PlayStation link. So even if you were having like an impulse buy, you're looking at the review coverage, oh my God, I might like see how much it costs. It wasn't on Amazon. It wasn't like readily available. It was only through Sony. And the price is ludicrous anyway. I saw Jeff Grubb like just saying that, you know, the price isn't long for this world, that it's probably going to go down anyway. But yeah, it's a market issue. It's a game issue. Like, they have Horizon Call of the Mountain, but that doesn't seem to be blowing anybody away.
But then you've got that situation where if you say, right, okay, this price isn't working for us, we've got to lower it to get more people on board, you've basically just insulted the people who were your earliest and biggest supporters. You basically just said, cool, thanks for your money, now we're going to give a better deal to somebody else, because there weren't enough suckers like you. And that sucks. That's awful.
Yeah, if they drop it, because the thing is, to make it, I mean, it is competitive with other VR headsets, like if you're up against like the Vive or whatever. But like, still, it's that whole thing of like, a console audience just doesn't want to spend more than the console itself on something that they don't even know if they're going to get the mileage out of.
They should definitely do a Sony good guy moment where they just say, okay, we are going to allow other headsets to work with our console. If I know that it might seem like a massive sort of risk for them to do that, but if they lower the price and they open up access to all of it, you'll probably find people still will support Sony to have the branding co-op go across it. But I do think if you open it up to just just allow anyone with a virtual reality headset to use their games on that system, you're probably going to get a massive boom, because it will be like, finally, this is where VR gaming is.
Yeah, that's true. I think it
would be so hard to do, though. And probably wouldn't. It's just.
Well, it's all the ongoing stuff with the Microsoft trying to acquire Call of Duty, and they were like, their latest reason why they can't let them acquire the game is that they might release a buggy version on PlayStation and perfect the game over on Xbox.
That's
written in some black and white now. They feel threatened or whatever by the idea of that. So yeah, Sony are very buttoned up in that regard. But yeah, VR stuff is fascinating for me, because I didn't even realize it was coming out, and then the price tag is ridiculous, and then just seeing that, okay, what should I buy it for? And then it's kind of like, well, they're VR versions of what you've already played. Like, it's cool, they're great, but yeah, it's not selling me just yet, even though the tech is incredible. And like Josh was like, it is phenomenal if you can afford it.
But the tech's always been incredible with VR headsets. It's always worked. It's
outside
just
the console space, yeah.
It's just where's the real drive to get it?
Mm-hmm. I think what they showed on the State of Play, they showed that game called Before Your Eyes, which you control by blinking. And I think that's cool.
That's very cool.
Like, literally, you're like progressing through someone's life based on a set of memories, and you choose when you want to see the next one based on how long you can keep your eyes open, and you're struggling to see certain things. And I was like, that's really cool. Like, give me 10 more things like that. Which again brings it right back around to our indie AAA thing, where it's like, you need those really cool gameplay hooks. But yeah, I can't speak as someone who's played the PSVR 2. I do have a PSVR, and that was fine. It was fun enough, but it didn't blow me away. It doesn't feel like it is the dual analog stick thing. Final question from BDub3815, who says, what's the best game I'm not playing on Game Pass or PlayStation Plus? I'll download your answer ASAP.
The best game you're not playing on Game Pass or PlayStation Plus?
It's Dodgeball Academia.
I was going to say Dodgeball, but it was taken off of Game Pass recently.
Oh, so, did they? Yeah.
So I don't know the answer to this one now, because I was looking through Game Pass and was like, okay, there's a decent selection of video games, but mostly it's stuff that I've already played before or I'm not that super keen on, because like I've said to Scott many times and you at home, listening, is that I only have a finite amount of time for gaming, so I basically have to choose which three of big games I'm going to have at the moment.
I cannot believe they took that game off Game Pass. That would be the thing that I would immediately recommend to anyone. That game is stellar.
Isn't Wolong Fallen Dynasty?
Yeah.
I'd say pick that up, because I know it's like people are saying that it's like the new Sekiro.
I was surprised that was on Game Pass, like as like a full price thing that is also over on PlayStation. It stands out.
I reckon that what they should do is, because I'm just on the Leaving Soon tab of the Xbox Game Pass thing. Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy is leaving soon, so I would say download that now and get that experience in you, because it's actually really, really good. And annoyingly, it's probably never going to get a sequel, never going to get a follow-up, because it was just a single-player game that was actually decent, and it basically spat in the face of Marvel's Avengers, and they didn't like that.
No, there is also the Guardians game is also in the same space as Midnight Suns. Even though Midnight Suns isn't on Game Pass yet, I absolutely believe it will be once the Season Pass stuff is out the way.
They need to, because of the fact that the game's died on its ass in terms of sales, apparently. I think that what it is that because the PC version when it came out was slightly buggy, and people spoke a lot about that the high school romance element style sub-stories that you have and not being the central draw of why you play this game, people were given like a very bad impression of what that game is. But what it is in actuality is a fantastic strategy game that is super rewarding, very funny, and deftly written. I love that game. However, just maybe don't pick it up on the Switch. I think that the Switch version that they said is coming is going to be buggy as hell.
Any Switch version of a big game. There was a whole thing about, again, that Call of Duty stuff where Activision was saying, oh, we can get the newest Modern Warfare, we can get all that stuff working on Switch. And I'm like, yeah, in like 360p. Yeah. Like, it's not going to be remotely fun to play. I was just scrolling through my most recently played stuff, and hardly any of it is Game Pass stuff. However, Hi-Fi Rush is. So I'd still recommend checking that out. That game is absolutely gorgeous, and its completion rates are tiny. People seem to have only done the first few levels and not
kept
going.
Come on, you can do it. You can do it.
For now, though, this has been the Untitled Panda Podcast. The UBP. I've been Scott Tillerford. That's been Jules Gill.
I have indeed.
A massive, massive thank you to everybody for sending in their various questions and thoughts. We will return in full next week, but for now, thank you all very much, and we'll catch you next week. Goodbye. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.